Well, thank you, Ron, and good morning, everyone. It's Sunday morning. It's 10:15 Eastern Time, and we're gathered in the Pal Talk Room, ACIM gathered, for A Course in Miracles. An important part of Awakening Together is our weekly gathering. And this is a special time of the week and that's reserved for the assembly of our members and friends. We join together online in musical celebration and interactive community and teaching, silence, and contemplation. Each gathering is held and led by an Awakening Together minister, an Awakening Together member reader, and an administrator also assist in the gathering. Everyone is invited to participate at specific times during the gathering. So now, let's take a few moments and greet each other as we assemble for today's service. You may use the Pal Talk board to type a greeting, give a hug, or leave a comment, like where you reside or what the weather is like where you are. And the music is from Fiona Joy Hawkins from her album Ice. The song is entitled Winter Cold. It's very appropriate here in Grand Junction, Colorado, this morning. At this time, I'd like to give a brief explanation of the purpose of Awakening Together. Barb DeWater is our administrator today, and Barb D may post a link where you can access our purpose and values. We are an assembly of equals, joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and rest in its embrace. You may read more about our purpose and values on our website, and for those listening in on the radio, it's www.awakening-together.org, and then look under About Us and Purpose and Values. There is a consistent wisdom in the universe, and it shows up in all religious and philosophy, in all cultures, and throughout time. This wisdom is not unique or new. It's owned by no one and by no organization. No one has to go to a special place or a special teacher to find it. It's the most abundant wisdom in the universe. Once one opens his or her heart to this wisdom, it appears everywhere by the hand of universal grace. There's also a way of not seeing universal wisdom. We all have the ability to be distracted from it and self-limited or segmenting beliefs. Awakening Together is an online universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. And we want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. We have five core values that guide us on our path. First, we trust everyone is led by unique inner guidance to one experience called awakening, which is the realization of our one true self. And we live this value by supporting one another on different paths of awakening. And second, we realize everyone is equal, and no one has been given spiritual intuition that is an authority over the spiritual intuition of others. And we live this value by listening to each other, respecting each other, and allowing each other to be where he or she is. And third, we accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. And we live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Fourth, we affirm one true self as the only truth, and we live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. And fifth, we accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self, and we live this value by honoring the appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. Before we get started, I have a couple of announcements. You're invited to join Regina in Costa Rica, March 8th through 17th, 2014, for a week-long contemplative retreat hosted by Jeff Danner. It features beauty, quiet, and relaxation, small group discussions, insight and realization, and fun. It's $1,500 per person, and that includes airport transfer to the site, and shared accommodations, and three vegetarian meals per day, with fish and eggs provided. Also, Choose Again retreat will be held in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, May 3rd through 10th in 2014, with Diedrich Walczak and Claudette Thomas. And if you've held any stress or anxiety or anger, depression, conflict, or addictive behavior, Choose Again can help. Choose Again's effective approach has helped thousands discover a deeper sense of peace and joy in all aspects of their life. Usually people have to travel to Costa Rica to experience Choose Again's attitudinal healing, but now Choose Again is coming to the United States for a week-long retreat, and it's sponsored by Awakening Together. So now it's time for our opening song, and I've selected a piece from the album Relax 2. It's called Twisted Cupid. And this is a time to quiet the mind, put away the cares of the day, and just be here now. you have attended these weekly gatherings for the past few months, you may have noticed that we have a rotation schedule of the ministers of Awakening Together. And you may have noticed that Regina's and Dove's and my teaching styles are all very different. We each have our own different personalities. And that's good. The variety keeps things more interesting. I tend to closely follow the Awakening Program Guide, as outlined on our website. And one of the reasons for this is that we will be applying to the IRS for a church status, and they assign a caseworker to look at the items that indicate that we operate like a church. So our format is similar to most traditional church services. And the outline is found on our website. It's at awakening-together.org, interact/weekly-gathering-program. And it includes the following items. There's the minister's welcome, and then friends and members greet one another. There's a statement of purpose, announcements, an opening song or chant, an invocation, an inspirational reading by a member, an inspirational teaching by a minister, and then open meditation or contemplation by all, and open sharing by all, and finally a minister's gratitude and the closing song or chant. And there are suggested times for each segment, and that's the times are also specified. And I try to comply with the outline and conduct the service by the schedule. So now is the time on our schedule for our invocation. I'd like to play a musical rendition of the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is My Shepherd," and it's sung by Paul McNutt. By the way, Paul is my uncle.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yet though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. and I will dwell in the house of the Lord.
About an angel encounter that was reprinted many times in various publications.
So I've always been fascinated by angels. Angels seem to be all about us in this time of the year. We hear a story about how an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you will give him the name Jesus, because he will be a savior of the world." We hear stories of how angels appeared to shepherds tending flocks by night, announcing the arrival of baby Jesus. So what are angels? The dictionary defines angel as a ministering spirit or divine messenger, one of an order of spiritual beings superior to man in power and intelligence, who are the attendants and messengers of the deity. Winged spirits, angels, they're part of the mystery of every culture. Ghosts seem to be spirits of the dead, but angels are messengers of the divine. Most angels come anonymously, as happened to Ralph Harlow in the 1930s. And this is the story that my wife Judy has chosen as this morning's inspirational reading. So Judy will continue to read that story at this time.
Including Guideposts and Spiritual Frontiers Fellowship. The story, entitled The Day We Saw the Angels, is by Professor S. Ralph Harlow of Northampton, Massachusetts. It took place in the 1930s. It was not Christmas, it was not even winter time, when the event occurred that for me threw sudden new light on the ancient angel tale. It was a glorious spring morning, and we were walking, my wife and I, through the newly budded birches and maples near Ballard Vale, Massachusetts. Now, I realize that this, like any account of personal experience, is only as valid as the good sense and honesty of the person relating it. What can I say about myself? That I am a scholar who shuns guesswork and admires scientific investigation? That I have a BA from Harvard, an MA from Columbia, a PhD from Hartford Theological Seminary, that I have never been subject to hallucinations, that attorneys have solicited my testimony, and I have testified in the courts, regarded by judge and jury as a faithful, reliable witness? All this is true, and yet I doubt that any amount of such credentials can influence the belief or disbelief of another. In the long run, each of us must sift what comes to us from others through his own life experience, his view of the universe, his understanding. And so I will simply tell my story. The little path on which Marion and I walked that morning was spongy to our steps, and we held hands with the sheer delight of life as we strolled near a lovely brook. It was May, and because it was the examination reading period for students at Smith College, where I was a professor, we were able to get away for a few days to visit Marion's parents. We frequently took walks in the country, and we especially loved the spring after a hard New England winter. For it is then that the fields and the woods are radiant and calm, yet show new life bursting from the earth. This day we were especially happy and peaceful. We chatted sporadically with great gaps of satisfying silence between our sentences. Then from behind us we heard the murmur of muted voices in the distance, and I said to Marion, "We have company in the woods this morning." Marion nodded and turned to look. We saw nothing, but the voices were coming nearer at a faster pace than we were walking, and then we knew that the strangers would soon overtake us. Then we perceived that the sounds were not only behind us, but above us, and we looked up. How can I describe what we felt? Is it possible to tell of the surge of exaltation that ran through us? Is it possible to record this phenomenon in objective accuracy and yet be credible? For about 10 feet above us and slightly to our left was a floating group of glorious, beautiful creatures that glowed with spiritual beauty. We stopped and stared as they passed above us. There were 6 of them, young, beautiful women, dressed in flowing white garments and engaged in earnest conversation. If they were aware of our existence, they gave no indication of it. Their faces were perfectly clear to us, and one woman, slightly older than the rest, was especially beautiful. Her dark hair was pulled back in what today we would call a ponytail, and although I cannot say it was bound at the back of her head, it appeared to be, she was talking intently to a younger spirit whose back was toward us and who looked up into the face of the woman who was talking. Neither Marion nor I could understand their words, although their voices were clearly heard. The sound was somewhat like hearing, but being unable to understand a group of people talking outside a house with all the windows and doors shut. They seemed to float past us, and their graceful motion seemed natural, as gentle and peaceful as the morning itself. As they passed, their conversation grew fainter and fainter until it faded out entirely, and we stood transfixed on the spot, still holding hands and still with the vision before our eyes. It would be an understatement to say that we were astounded. Then we looked at each other, each wondering if the other also had seen. There was a fallen birch tree just there beside the path. We sat down on it, and I said, "Marion, what did you see? Tell me exactly in precise detail, and tell me what you heard." She knew my intent to test my own eyes and ears to see if I had been the victim of hallucination or imagination. Her reply was identical in every respect to what my own senses had reported to me. I have related this story with the same faithfulness and respect for truth and accuracy as I would tell it on the witness stand. But even as I record it, I know how incredible it sounds. Perhaps I can claim no more for it than it has had a deep effect on our own lives, for this experience of almost 30 years ago greatly altered our thinking. This is a validation that the angels can be seen with your physical eyes open, if only you believe. One of the lessons you can choose to receive from this story is the angels can make their presence known even to the greatest of skeptics. Even if you are a skeptic by nature, choose to open your eyes to the possibilities of witnessing heaven on earth.
Okay, thank you, Judy. Today, I want to talk about angels and miracles and the supernatural. So what do you think? Do angels really exist? A new Associated Press poll shows that 77% of adults believe these ethereal beings are real. Skeptics say that they are just fictional characters in Bible stories. But people around the world have reported personal encounters or sightings of angels. The people who tell these true stories are convinced that these extraordinary beings really do exist. For most Americans, they're a year-round experience. Angels don't just sing at Christmas time. 8 out of every 10 Americans believe in angels. In Hebrews 13, verse 2, it says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have entertained angels unawares," or without knowing it. Scores of books have been written, and countless stories have been told about and by people who have had personal encounters with angels. Sometimes they are described as beings of light, other times as remarkably human or beautiful humans, and even as ordinary-looking people. They almost always appear in time of need. Sometimes the need is profound, like a person is at the point of suicide, and other times the need is relatively mundane, like a young woman out alone at night gets a flat tire and is assisted by a kind stranger who seems to come out of nowhere and vanishes without a trace. It is said that angels come as thoughts, as visions, as dreams, as animals, as light on the water or in clouds and rainbows, and as people too. Are they walking this earth as people in disguise? Do they appear for one moment and then vanish into the ether again? Or is it really us, mere humans, who for a moment are picked up by the hand of God and made to speak, unwittingly, the words that another needs to hear, or to hold out a lifeline to another soul? I'm convinced that I have a guardian angel. When I was 4 or 5 years old, early one morning, there was a huge angel standing at the foot of the bed. It said, "Don't be afraid, child. I'm here to watch over you." And then it just disappeared. Throughout my life, I've often felt the force of an entity being with me. Many times when I've been stuck with some problem, I'd think about it as I was falling asleep at night, and then in the middle of the night, I'd awaken with a solution. I kept a pad and pencil near the bed, and I'd write it down, and in the morning, I'd look at it and happily implement the idea. My first job with IBM was as a customer engineer, troubleshooting and repairing the old punch card equipment. Some of these machines would have banks of vacuum tubes or relays, and I had schematic diagrams to follow, but sometimes I'd get lost in them. And after spinning my wheels for a while, sometimes I would just say, "Please, help me." Then I just let go and let intuition guide me. And my hand would be guided across a bank of relays or components and come intuitively to at a particular component. And I'd pull it out and discover the problem and replace it. And then I'd thank my angel for the intuition that helped me fix it. At the time, I called my angels my guides, and it seemed I had different guides for different problems. Once I built my own house. It was a Buckminster Fuller geodesic dome in Winter Park. I had picked up some construction skills working on apartments that I owned. And what I didn't know about construction, I'd research in books like about plumbing or electrical circuitry, books that I found at the library. Sometimes I'd run into a problem on the job that I just didn't know how to do. And at that time, I'd go sit in a corner for a while and just be quiet. And after a while, an answer would just pop into my mind. So I'd get up and implement the idea. It seems that one of my guides was a builder. Sometimes when I'm working in the garden or the orchard or vineyard, I'm accompanied by elementals, little beings that laugh and play with me. I call them my gardening angels. There are many mysteries in life that we just don't understand. For example, there are aboriginals who regularly communicate over hundreds of miles through mental telepathy. Or we have stories of mothers knowing of an illness or of a death of a member of their family halfway around the world. There are many times that we just get instances of a synchronicity or a serendipity or the supernatural, a paranormal, psychic experience, psychic phenomena. And it seems like everyone has a story about ghosts or goblins or spooks or guardian angels, elementals, pixies, little peoples, spirits and fairies and elves and leprechauns. I knew a lady where I worked once that would know someone was about to call her, and she'd always know when her phone was about to ring. She'd point to it, and within 10 or 15 seconds, the phone would start ringing. I've had a lot of people tell me that they would be thinking about someone, and then that person would suddenly call on the telephone. And sometimes a person with a question or a problem may pull a book, and the book just falls open exactly to the page where the problem is found, or the answer is found. And this is often the case that happens with the Bible or A Course in Miracles book. So my wife, Judy, has long been interested in angels, and she's had a few significant angel encounters, and they have heightened her awareness of the guidance of the messengers of love and the peace and the joy that they bring. One angelic encounter that happened a few years ago, while she was on a trip to England, she was traveling with some friends, and they were driving to a bed and breakfast on the English countryside where they had a reservation. It was late fall, and darkness fell early, and it was a rainy night, and they realized that they were disoriented and completely lost on a dark country road. And this was before cell phones or GPSs. And it was getting late, and they stopped on a deserted country lane to consider their choices. And at that moment, headlights appeared, and a kindly man asked if they needed help. And they gave him an address, and he led them many miles down several winding roads right to the B&B. And when they turned to thank him, he had disappeared as quickly as he had appeared. And in another instant, some time ago, Judy was a volunteer as a senior companion. She met weekly with a woman named Anna, and she took Anna to her doctor appointments and to grocery shop and to visit. And it was a pleasant experience. And then one day she received a call from the Office for Volunteers asking her to sit for a few hours in the home with a man that she did not know. And she hesitated, but she accepted the assignment. The man was very ill and bedridden in his home, and she was really not qualified to meet his needs and demands. Judy was quite frightened of his behavior, and she was at the point of tears when she simply said, "God, please help me." And at that moment, the doorbell rang, and a uniformed nurse carrying a medical case appeared. She said, "It's not my normal time to stop here, but I was in the neighborhood and decided to stop by." And seeing Judy's discomfort, she hugged her and told her that she could leave and that she would stay with the man until his regular nurse returned. So both of these experiences were so profound that Judy has never doubted for a moment that they were true angelic encounters. There are lots of experiences, stories about ESP or extrasensory perception, telepathy, telekinesis, channeling, remote viewing. You know, instances like a small frail woman lifting up a car off of a child pinned underneath, or a car suddenly swerving to avoid a child that the driver hadn't even seen, or like Regina's instant healing of a broken toe or burnt hands. And the list just goes on and on of all of these mysterious miracles or supernatural events. Albert Einstein described a sense of the mysterious in The Principle of Religion in his book, The World as I See It. He said, "The most beautiful and deepest experience a man can have is the sense of the mysterious. It is the underlying principle of religion, as well as all serious endeavor in art and science. He who has never had this experience seems to me, if not dead, then at least blind. To sense that behind everything that can be experienced, there is a something our mind cannot grasp and whose beauty and sublimity reaches us only indirectly and as a feeble reflection. This is religiousness. In that sense, I am religious. To me, it suffices to wonder at these secrets and to attempt humbly to grasp with my mind a mere image of the lofty structure of all that there is." And this was from Albert Einstein, a scientist. It is said that coincidence is God's way of performing a miracle anonymously. And so what is a miracle? Well, according to A Course in Miracles, on page 473, we read, "A miracle is a correction. It does not create nor change anything at all. It merely looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. It undoes your error, but does not attempt to go beyond perception, nor to exceed the function of forgiveness. It stays within time's limits, yet it paves the way for the return of timelessness and love's awakening, for fear must slip away under the gentle remedy it brings." And then there's the age-old question, what am I? What am I? Who am I? Why am I here? According to the Course, on page 479, it says, "I am God's Son, complete and healed and whole, shining in the reflection of His love. In me is his creation sanctified and guaranteed eternal life. In me is love perfected, fear impossible, and joy established without opposite. I am the holy home of God himself. I am the heaven where his love resides. I am his holy sinless itself, for in my purity abides his own. We are mind. This world is a thought of the Son of God. Have you ever noticed wherever you go, there you are? You can never escape yourself. Your problems follow you. You continue to be who you are. The greener grass turns out to be all the same. When you search the world over and finally return home, you may find that you had acres of diamonds in your own backyard all along. Whatever you wind up doing, that's what you've wound up doing. Whatever you are thinking right now, that's what's on your mind. Whatever's happened to you has already happened. The important question is, how are you going to handle it? In other words, now what? This moment is all we really have to work with. Yet we conduct our lives as if forgetting momentarily that we are here, where we already are, and that we are in whatever we are already in. In every moment, we find ourselves at the crossroad of here and now. But when the cloud of forgetfulness over where we are now sets in that very moment, we get lost. Now what becomes a real problem? And by lost, I mean we momentarily lose touch with ourselves and with the full extent of our possibilities. Instead, we fall into a robot-like way of seeing and thinking and doing. We get lost with what is deepest in ourselves and gives us perhaps our greatest opportunities for creativity and learning and growing. And if we're not careful, these unconscious moments can stretch out to become most of our lives. Instead, it seems as if we are preoccupied with the past, with what has already happened, or with the future, that which hasn't arrived yet. And we look for someplace else to go, where we hope things will be better, happier, and more the way that we want them to be, or the way that they used to be. Most of the time, we are only partially aware of this inner tension, if we're aware of it at all. And what's more, we are only partially aware of exactly what we are doing in our lives and the effects that our actions and our thoughts have on what we see or don't see, what we do or don't do. For instance, we usually fall quite unawares into assuming that the ideas and opinions we are thinking are the truth about what is out there in a world, and what in here in our minds. Most of the time, it just isn't so. We lock ourselves into a personal fantasy that we already know who we are, that we already know where we are or where we are going, that we know what is happening. We stay in our thoughts, fantasies, mostly about the past and about the future, about what we want and like, or what we fear and don't like. Awakening to getting out from dreams and from the nightmares that they often turn into. Not knowing that you are even in such a dream is what the Buddhists call, they call it ignorance or mindlessness. And being in touch with this I don't know is called mindfulness. Waking up from these dreams is the work of meditation, of present moment awareness. And this waking up goes hand in hand with what we might call wisdom, a seeing more deeply into the cause and effect of the interconnectedness of things so that we're no longer stuck in a dream of our own creation. To find our way, we need to pay more attention to this moment, now. Now is the only time that we have in which to grow and live and feel and change. In conclusion, I'd like to read a poem. It's entitled, Your Guardian Angel. You have a guardian angel who watches over you, everywhere you go and everything you do. This gentle, silent helper is there to be your guide, to shelter and protect you, and walk for you to walk beside. Your angel will always help you, no matter whenever things go wrong. You'll have the wings beneath your feet as life's path you walk along. This calming presence be enfolded by its love. Let your life be guided by a power from above. So this is a time for contemplation or meditation. And during an interlude of music, you can contemplate or reflect on the message about angels or miracles, the supernatural, and perhaps think about a time in your life when you may have encountered an angel without knowing it. This is from Sensual Journeys by Fiona Joy Hawkins. It's entitled Contemplating. This is also a time that we take up an offering. We pass the plate or basket for a gift. Barb D. will post a link where you may, if you like, make a donation to Awakening Together. We deeply appreciate your gifts and offerings because they help support the organization Awakening Together. We acknowledge that all giving comes from the hearts of our members and friends. And we gratefully thank you. Thank you. So now we have about 10 minutes for sharing. And I invite you to share your thoughts, or maybe you have a story about an angel encounter in your life. So just raise your hand, and I'll pass the mic over to you. Okay, dances. I'll pass the mic along.
First of all, thank you so much for your this awesome sharing today and all of it that's been here and all the comments. I've had a lot of them, but I didn't recognize them at the time. One that really stands out, it happened a long time ago, that's very different from the others, was I had climbed up this cliff. I was trying to look to see, there were these little holes in the cliff, and I was trying to see if there were any nests in there, little swallows. And I got up okay, and I have, like, my counterbalance is, like, when I'm coming down, it's usually when I fall, and actually, this has happened twice. I've fallen off of a cliff, and the first time my dad ran over and he stepped on my fingers just in time before I went over the edge, and I was really young then. The second time I was grown, and when I was trying to come down, I fell. My body weight, you know, the front of me went forward, and I should have just come down backwards. I knew better, but as fast as I was trying to get my footing, I just couldn't. And then there was nothing to put my foot on anymore. And I can only describe it as there was this sense of something lifting me up under my arms. And when I landed, it was like it just broke my fall so that my full weight wasn't down and I was uninjured. I had a scratch on my knee, and that was it. When there's no other way to describe it other than something lifted me. The other ones were a little more like your average everyday angels who just show up, you know, random acts of kindness, things that I think most of us have probably had and not even realized. But that was a big one that you just reminded me of. So I used to not believe in angels either, but whatever you want to call it, that's, I don't know what else I would give a name to. Thank you. Here's the mic.
Yeah, go ahead, Regina.
Good morning, everyone. I found that to be a very inspiring talk, Phil. And of course, you know, the funny thing is, you know, I don't know, have any idea if you know, what I heard is what anyone else heard. Because, you know, I've learned that the mind is always interpreting. It can be a right-minded interpretation or it can be a wrong-minded interpretation. But one thing that's for sure, it's interpretation. So, you know, we can all hear the same talk and hear something completely different in it. But you know, one thing that I was inspired by is the quote you were reading by Albert Einstein. And what I heard in that is that, you know, the excitement for life, the love for life, the fullness for life, the fullness for being here and for this experience comes from recognizing the mystery in all experiences. We could say the mystery in the most simple experience, like the fact that we breathe without even thinking about it, you know, or the mystery in something like someone, you know, being lifted from falling off of a cliff, or a broken toe being healed, or someone, you know, experiencing an angel or you know, anything at all. You know, you mentioned lots of you know, in our world, controversial ideas like, are there angels? Are there ghosts? You know, we could get into, are there UFOs? You know, and any one of those controversial ideas, you know, you're always going to find people that believe in them. You're always going to find people that say, I've had an experience with it. And then you're always going to find people that says, you know, that stuff isn't true. You know, it doesn't happen. You know, that's mind tricks. You know, and you know, it seemed to me as you were talking that if I decide, yes, those things are true, ghosts are true, angels are true, miraculous healings are true, or if I decide those things are not true, there's no such thing as ghosts, there's no such thing as angels, there's no such thing as miraculous healings, either way, what I've done is I've stepped out of the mystery that Einstein was talking about into a decided certainty, which is ego, and it closes down the mystery of the moment for me. It closes it up into what I have decided is true, whether I decided, yes, there are ghosts or no, there are not ghosts. Either way, once I've decided, I've closed something up. Where being undecided, being I don't know, being in the open experience of the moment, that's what I heard Einstein pointing to. And it also reminded me of A Course in Miracles, lesson 189, paragraph 7, which I know we all know, but I'm going to read it anyway. Simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is, all concepts you have learned about the world, all images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, or good or bad, of every thought it judges worthy, and all the ideas of which it is ashamed. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. Forget this world, forget this course, and come with wholly empty hands into your God. To me, that is talking about that pure mystery that I heard Einstein pointing to and the way my mind interpreted the quote. And I think he called that religiousness, right? Religiousness is remaining undecided, not deciding this is true, not deciding this is false, not even based on my own experience, you know, because this says forget everything you learned, you know, from anywhere, which would include my own experience. So I don't even want to say I know there are ghosts because I had an experience. As soon as I say I know there are ghosts because I had an experience, I actually enter the closed and I exit the mystery. So staying in the absolute mystery of each moment, that's what I heard Einstein call religiousness, and that's very exciting and very inspiring to me, and I thank you for sharing it today.
Thank you, Regina. That was beautiful. I appreciate your comments. Go ahead, Robbie, take the mic.
Aloha. Thank you, Phil. Regina spoke of interpretation, and everything goes through our reducing valve. It's kind of a totality field, and we want to keep it as a open-ended system rather than using it as, you know, judging and saying, I'm certain about this or certain about that. But being open to the mystery, as you said, and Regina reiterated, that there's infinite possibility. We don't know. We have to admit. We have to surrender and admit that we don't know. Keep the mystery. Many times I've had a little nudge on my shoulder or my back when I felt there was a presence of some kind. I don't know what it is. It's a mystery to keep in keeping with the theme. But I said, what is it that I need to know right now? What is it I need to do or whatever? Because I'm getting a nudge. And it, you know, I would kind of figure it out. I don't know if I ever figured it out, but I would try to analyze it. Of course, you know, that's human nature, I guess. And sometimes I felt certain, and sometimes I didn't, and I left it as a mystery, which is probably better. And so anywho, that's one kind of angel-like experience. I've had that many times. Another time when I was 16, my father was an abusive alcoholic, and he did what those guys do. And so they went to Hawaii, and my cousin, who was probably 21, was taking care of me, and he wasn't ever home. So anyway, I put enough money selling my French coat and a few things. I was 16 to fly to Los Angeles to stay with my older brother, who is my father figure. And he had been in the Haight-Ashbury, and he was an old hippie, and I was kind of a young hippie, or a wannabe hippie. And this is 1967, right in there. So I got down there, but I only had a dime in my packet, in my pocket. And so I put the dime in, and I called my brother. But I didn't realize there was 50 zillion area codes in the Los Angeles area. So I dialed what I thought was the right area code, and I got the wrong number. And I started just bawling, just crying, because I didn't know what to do. And the operator heard me, and I consider her an angel. And she said, "Well, what are you doing, young man? What's wrong?" And I said, I don't know where my brother is. I dialed the wrong number. And she said, "Well, where is he?" And she put in the proper area code so I could contact him and get a ride over to his house. So I consider her an angel because that's kind of a mystery, like why or how or, but she heard me. And she sounded like an angel. It was a very interesting voice. And I wish I could thank her, and I'll thank her in my consciousness. And so anyway, that's my experience. I just want to share that. And thank you very much, Phil and Regina, for sharing your mystery. Aloha.
Thank you, Robbie. That was beautiful. So I'd like to thank you all for your attendance today. And thanks to our reading assistant, Judy Frisk, and to our administrator, Barb Duarte. And please stay tuned if you can. This is our closing song. It's from an album, Lifescape's Peaceful Harp. And it's entitled, My Sweet Home. Thank you. Well, thank you again, everyone, and please stay tuned if you can and join us for an hour of fellowship following immediately right here in this room. And I will now release